for the first 2 years, it was very chaotic, being passed around from family member to family member. And then she left me in a grocery store with a stranger. And then I got put into the system.
All right, Caitlin.
Yes.
Caitlin, where'd you grow up? Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Spokane, Washington. I always say, if you haven't gone, don't go. I would say it's a mid-sized town, and everybody kind of knows everybody in it.
Tell me about your family growing up.
So I was born into like a very dysfunctional, alcoholic, drug-fueled family. I was born a month early due to my biological mom using meth and other substances, and so I was born a month early. And they tested me, and I was addicted as well. And for the first 2 years, it was very chaotic, being passed around from family member to family member. And then she left me in a grocery store with a stranger. And then I got put into the system and was a foster kid for 5 years. It was a very abusive home. There were five of us in that home, and it was very abusive, I was locked up a lot, not given food or water. And then I got adopted when I was 7 and into a family of 12.
When you say there was a lot of abuse, what kind of abuse?
So I would get locked in my room with another kid, and not given any food for days on end. I'd get thrown downstairs, hit by, I don't know how to name her, but by my abuser, and it was all played off. She was very good at sweeping things under the rug. So she would lie to CPS, she would lie to my school, and it was a very tumultuous time in my life.
And no sexual abuse in your childhood?
Not that I can remember. I remember talking to my mom about it, like my adoptive mom about it, and she would say that I would say things like, because I'm trans, and so, like, before I started transitioning, when I was younger, I would tell her things, and she would say, like, oh, you would say these things, but she didn't really know, and I didn't know. I don't remember.
What kind of teenager were you?
I was two people. One very quiet person at home. I grew up very Catholic, in a very Catholic and strict home. So, like, we weren't allowed to do much. We weren't allowed to watch much. And so, like, I had a very sheltered upbringing. And so at home, very reserved, very quiet, very focused. And then at school, I was like blah all over the place, and just kind of was the class clown and carefree, and it did get me into some trouble in terms of my grades declining, teachers being frustrated with me. And through that, I was just trying to cope with my childhood and trying to cope with everything that happened. And so during the teen years, I was involved in like a very heavy eating disorder and drinking here and there and binging and purging. It was a lot. And then on top of that, I was a quiet teenager, but I also like let things fester up until they would blow up. And it was my whole family's problem.
Hmm. You left home at what age?
I left home at 18 to go to eating disorder treatment for 3 months. Then I went back home for a little bit and then turned 19 back in Spokane. And then I moved to Orange County to go back into eating disorder treatment and get sober as well. And so I just kind of stayed down here after that. And I've been living in Southern California for 10 years.
Yeah. And getting sober from what?
Alcohol. Yeah.
Is that still a struggle for you?
No. I'm 9 years sober.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Good for you.
I've kind of struggled with the eating disorder throughout the 9 years, but I'm almost 9 months abstinent now.
And you transitioned at what age?
I started transitioning at 23. Started taking hormones at 23 and changed my name to, started going by Caitlin at 23, and my family didn't take that very well. I came out to them twice before. Came out as bisexual at 15. Now, everybody knew I wasn't bisexual, but except me, I was the last to know. But 15, came out to my sister, actually, and then she went and told my mom, and then I got in trouble. It was this whole conversation for about a couple of hours about how I needed to go to church more, how I needed to talk to the priest, and just be a good little Catholic and everything would be fine. And from that point on, I just started keeping that stuff to myself and only really telling my friends that weren't connected to my family, because a lot of my friends growing up were connected to my family in some way. And so I made sure that my friends were not connected to my like immediate family structure at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very traumatizing. Started keeping everything to myself. And then I came out as gay to my mom on a 3-day car trip back from Spokane. I drove to Spokane by myself, and then we drove back together. To anyone who's coming out to their family, I do not recommend that. Locked in a car for 3 days. And that was also very traumatizing. My grandparents are also very Catholic, and they gave her like a pamphlet for like a Pray the Gay Away 12-step program. And she gave it to me, and I didn't laugh for 3 days. I was either crying or just like in shock and didn't know what to do. Like in moments of panic and like when there's a lot of tension and panic and I'm panicking, I tend to freeze in that moment. And so like I just, for 3 days, I was either crying or I was shocked and just like didn't know what to say. And she refused to stay in my apartment. My mom refused to stay in my apartment because at the time I was also roommates with some of my closest friends who were also a gay couple. And so she refused to stay in my apartment and ended up having to buy her a hotel room. And I ended up doing it because I just was like, I want to get as far away from this situation as possible. And after that, I ended up going back to my apartment, crying to my friends, calling other supportive friends and just crying to them and venting about it because it was really traumatizing. And we kind of talked about it for a little bit after, my mom and I, and it was still very tense. And so when I came out as trans to them, they already kind of knew because they saw things on social media, and I ended up blocking all of my family. But when I officially came out to them, I ended up sending them, my parents, a letter snail mail because I didn't want to have that confrontation again. And we had one more conversation about it when, couple of years ago, I called her to wish her happy birthday, and she just talked about how, like, I miss the old you, dead naming me, and it, for me, that solidified that I needed to, like, set stronger, reinforce stronger boundaries and go no contact. And so from that point on, I've been no contact with my family.
And you feel like you were born this way?
Yes. Yeah. I felt that way from a very young age. I felt different from a very young age, from not really during the trauma and abuse, but after I got out of that situation and started to feel like myself and live my life and go into a somewhat loving family and a loving environment and taking care of me, I felt different. Not that this is like an indicator that I was trans, but like I was different from my brothers. Like I played with Barbies growing up. I wanted to be around my sisters all the time. And my parents could kind of see what was going on. And I would wear blankets and towels as dresses. And it was just, I felt like I was expressing myself, but they saw what was going on and they tried to change that as much as they could. Like they would put together outings where like they would say, who wants to go out with the boys? And it was like, and I would say, I'm a boy. And I'd want to go out because it was a fun outing. And then they threw me an I'm a boy party at age 7. Talk about trauma. And I remember talking about it with my mom in family therapy in eating disorder treatment, and it was something she was laughing at, and I wasn't taking it very, very humorously because it was just like, I don't know, it gave me the ick. I don't remember the party. There was a lot going on during that time. Like, there were several legal cases going on around my situation and my time in foster care. And so I just, there was a lot going on, and it was very, something that a 7-year-old shouldn't be going through on top of all the family stuff.
What was being part of the foster system and courts and all that stuff that you were involved in? What were the difficult parts of that for you?
Difficult parts were going through all of it because it was broadcasted on television, on the local news. And my parents during that time wouldn't let me go to the courthouse at all. They just were like, you need to stay at home with your siblings and be okay with that, you know? And so I did. And I saw my abuser on television. I remember one night they played like a court, everything going on in the courtroom. And it was late at night. I think it was like the 10 o'clock news. I don't know why I was up that late. I was 9 or 10, so I shouldn't have been up that late anyways, but I ended up watching it with my older sister, who's 8 years older than me, and after that, I couldn't sleep. I could not sleep. I thought, for a long time, I thought she was going to come back and take me away from my family because of all the criminal cases, all the cases going on, like, my adoption didn't get finalized until I was 10, so there was, like, a lot of time in between, and I thought it was going to get messed up, and I thought I wasn't going to be safe, and I want to say until I was, like, late teens, I thought she was going to come back and harm me in some way.
Was your father, your biological father in your life?
No, he left, and I didn't know him. I found him when I was in eating disorder treatment, actually. I Googled him and found him, and I tried to make a connection at like 20 years old, and he just kind of gave me the answer he gave me was very like, I wonder what your parents will say, like your adoptive parents, like you should talk to them first. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, I'm a fully grown adult. I want to, I don't know if you're open to it, having a conversation, but he didn't seem very, very interested in having that relationship. So I kind of let it go. And I thank God for that, because it's just like, it was never meant to be, you know? He left me when I was young, and he didn't want to come back as I got older, and I'm okay with that at this point in my life.
How old are you now?
28.
And what are you doing for work or with your
life? Kind of doing a little bit of everything, but my day job is like administrative assistant while I'm in school full time, and then doing some freelance PR stuff on the side. I'm in school for mass communications and media studies.
Hmm. What is the biggest struggle with being trans or any of the other things you struggle with?
The biggest thing I would say being trans is, I haven't really thought about that in a while.
You're in the right city for it.
I'm in the right city for it. In my career, I think the biggest struggle about being trans and Black is that I don't see people like me in the industry that I'm trying to get into. I don't see people like me in leadership roles in publicity. And as I continue my career and continue my education, that's something that I would like to be a voice for.
And you've been in love before?
Not really, no. I have had a few crushes, but not like in love. I would like that one day, though.
Is it more difficult being trans to find love, or?
I would say, for me, it's more, I would say, like, not so much trans. I feel like being overweight. I've been overweight for a long time, and it's something I'm working on changing.
Which is a bigger struggle for you?
Probably being overweight. I feel like I get looked at more for being overweight than being trans or Black, you know? And I've been really working on that. In the last 9 months, I've lost 84 pounds. And yeah.
With GLP?
GLP and the gym and eating better. Doing all of that together, not using the GLP as like a end all be all, because I did do that before and it didn't work. And I was like, why am I not losing any weight? Mm. And so I had to do everything together. And I feel so much better when I work out. I love a good workout now. A good leg day.
Were you heavier before?
I was. I was at my heaviest. I'll only say it here, but it was almost 500 pounds.
Wow.
And that scared me. Like, I have a picture of myself in February last year that I look back at. I look a lot different now, but...
How much do you weigh now?
I am 390, or like 390.
What kind of problems does a person have when they weigh this, you know, that much?
Body aching. I mean, but my body doesn't ache anymore, but when I was almost 500 pounds, my body would ache and it would be hard to walk for more than 5 minutes at a time.
Because of the weight you're carrying?
Because of the weight I was carrying. And
on your heart, on your lungs, on your ankles, on your knees?
Joints. Mostly like ankles. My ankles are swollen all the time. Feet were swollen. And I'm grateful that like that moment, that snapshot in time gave me the kick in the pants that I needed to like do something about it. And want to get healthier, because at the time I was 27 and I'm like, I refuse to be unhealthy at 27. I refuse to be having all of these health problems at 27. And it was really scary for me.
It's a good time to be around, given your situation with the...
Yeah.
Not only trans, but with the weight situation. It's like 2026 is a good time for all of this.
Yeah.
Better than 10, 20 years ago.
Definitely. And I'm sorry, I'm like at a loss for words, but I'm honestly grateful that I had I don't know what it was, higher power giving me that kick in the pants that I needed. And I feel a lot more present now in my life, now that I'm not stuffing my face and binging. And I felt disconnected before. I felt alone, totally because of the things that I was doing. I couldn't blame anyone else. I tried to, but it didn't work. I blamed other situations, blamed friends, blamed my family for a long time. But at the end of the day, it was up to me to do the work and to recognize that I was the problem.
And when you're binging and overeating and all that, it's not just the guilt of eating too much, but there's also all kinds of other mental problems to it, aren't there?
Yeah. For me, it was a way to like not be here and to not be present and to not feel any of my feelings. Like from a young age, I would do anything to not feel my feelings. Through the trauma, through being in that foster home especially, like my first addiction was fantasy and future tripping. Like I want to fantasize about being in someone else's life so that I don't have to feel being thrown down the stairs or locked in a room for hours on end without food or being drowned in a tub full of water or having hot oatmeal poured on my face. Like going through that growing up, fantasy was the first thing. And then moved in with my family, my forever family, and food became that next thing. It was a way for me to not be here. And it carried me for many years. And when I first went into my family's home at 7, like it was good for me to eat. You know, it was good for me to put on weight because I was at 7. My mom, I don't know what the PC term is, but my mom thought I was a little person. I weighed less than my 3-year-old brother at the time.
You're skinny.
Because of all the abuse and malnutrition that I was getting. And so it was good for me to do that for a while, but then 10 came around and I was just doing it to cope with my feelings.
Have you seen a therapist?
I have.
Was that helpful?
It was. I'm planning on going back to therapy soon, in the next week, actually.
Good for you.
Now that the food is kind of under control, not under control. Now that the food problem is like at bay and I'm working on that, I need to really dive deep into the trauma work again. Because when I'm doing everything in tandem, my life feels better, you know? I feel better.
Has religion been a part of your life?
Not in the first 7 years of my life, but when I went into my adoptive family, I was raised Catholic and go to church almost every weekend, have Sunday school, and it just, being who I am now, like, I always felt felt shamed, like, do this or you're going to hell or you're going to purgatory or, and it was always very, I was always very scared growing up of that. I didn't want to go to hell. I always felt like I was doing something wrong. And one moment in time that really, really solidified that I didn't want to be a part of religion was when I think like 10 or 11. Like I said earlier, like I was, had an eating disorder and I was sneaking food. I snuck food a lot. There was a phase in my life where I was sneaking food and hiding it. My mom found out and even though I don't talk to her, I love her to death, but this was like one moment in our relationship that like scarred me, I think. She pulled me out of the bathroom. She hit me a lot and then was hitting, we had this like big garage area or great room in on our property and there was a mattress in it and she was kind of like hitting me and then she had my siblings come out and pray the rosary over me while she was doing that and it was really traumatizing. And so I don't really, now at 20, I don't really identify with religion. And it was moments like that that caused me to be, I don't know, very apprehensive about it.
What was your lowest point?
Lowest point? Honestly, I don't know what, I've had several lowest points. I can go into all of them, but I mean, in my teens, my lowest point was binging and purging. An old therapist that I had equated it to me stuffing down my feelings and throwing them up. And I resonated with that so much. My purging got so bad that like my family found out and we lived on 11 acres of land in Washington and I didn't want them to find out. I was literally digging holes and throwing up in the holes. So that they wouldn't find out. That's how bad it got for me because I didn't want to think about or feel the feelings around my childhood.
Is this currently the where you're at today? Is this the best time of your life?
I would say early 20s were solid. I would say like COVID time was really good, which is like surprising for me. I had some really solid and close friends during that time. Wasn't really talking to my family. They were still in my life, but I wasn't really talking to them. So I had a really close-knit group of friends, and I was looking at videos from that time today, earlier, actually. COVID was a really good time for me, like, but yeah, I would say this is second. Last 9 months has probably been the best time in my 20s.
Do you have regrets in your life?
No, not actually, I have one. For the most part, no, I have one. Not being able to take that. He was like a brother to me. The little boy that was locked in the room with me growing up. Not getting able to take him with me. I had a lot of guilt about that for a very long time, and that's part of the reason why I ate and drank over traumatic things, like not being able to bring him with me. He ended up passing away in the home because of malnutrition and abuse. And I started looking into the court documents last year, like in September, October, when I had a little bit of downtime, and I found out some things that I'm very shocked by. And I knew a few things, like my parents told me very select things, but I remember the detectives coming over to our house to tell me at like 7, 8 years old that he had passed away. But the medical examiner didn't do a proper autopsy on his body when he passed away. And they ended up releasing the body to the abuser. And allegedly, because don't want to get into trouble, but allegedly she had burned his body on her property. And I have regrets about not being able to save him. I have regrets about not at least getting to have a funeral for him, you know, or going to his funeral.
The foster system's horrible, isn't it?
It is. It is. And we trauma bonded. We trauma bonded in that bedroom. And as I get older and move further into my career, I would like to reform as much as I can the foster care system, because what happened in our case, and this is like early 2000s, it's still going on today, but what happened in our case is unacceptable. My abuser got 7 years for murdering a child and abusing 4 others. And she got out on good behavior. And from looking over court documents and articles that are still out about my case, she didn't have any restrictions on her release except that she couldn't adopt kids or foster kids anymore. But she had nothing else. She was just let go and let free. Which is really messed up, because she did have power on her side. She was working at, I believe the district attorney's office in Spokane. And so my PR brain while I'm reading this is kicking in like optics. Of course they're going to help her get out of this and get so that they don't look bad. They're going to do what they can. That's my PR brain and thinking. But my inner child is like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, fuck.
It's a horrible world sometimes.
Yeah.
Caitlin, what would you say is the most important lesson you've learned in your life?
That the only person that you can really, really depend on is yourself, and the only person that's going to really help you to get out of your shit is yourself. Like, there are going to be people there that are going to support you, but at the end of the day, it's up to you to, like, want to get help and to want to do better and to do something with your life.
And that's what you're doing.
That's what I'm doing.
Good for you.
Thank you.
All right. Caitlin, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.